I'm Gab. He's Jules. It is sunny but very, very cold outside. And yet you're wearing short sleeves.
Do you like these shirts?
Walton and Hersham? Is that Walton on Thames?
It's that, exactly. They're in the ninth division of English football. The top of the league. They're hoping to go up. They've got the youngest owner in English football.
It's your son, right?
Yeah, it's
your
not my son, no? But they're doing a great job. So, you know, big up and keep the good work and keep the faith.
All right, let's move on to slightly more relevant matters because we have a packed show for you because there's so much going on.
Oh, yeah.
More issues at Barcelona, Morata, this and that. Chaos in Serie A due to COVID. Mad stuff. Ed Woodward saying sayonara.
Bye-bye.
But let's start with the massively important League Cup.
Yeah.
Chelsea against Spurs at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea win 2-0. Not really a surprise. I think in the last 36 times Spurs have traveled, made a short trip to Stamford Bridge. Say short trip. It's actually very long, depending on traffic. they've only won once.
Yes, that Dele Alli brace, wasn't it, that day?
I don't know. It's a bad memory for Chelsea fans. But this was no contest. And I thought, given Chelsea had a ton of absences, partly from COVID, Thiago Silva as well, partly because he was clearly going to rotate a squad, partly because the game took so much of it, partly because of the large Belgian distraction we call Romelu Lukaku.
Yep.
In fact, even though the two goals are a bit fortuitous, this was total one-way traffic.
Yeah, it was. It was the Chelsea B team still being too good and too strong for the Spurs A team because Spurs are pretty much very, very close to their strongest 11. And yet, despite that, Chelsea was still too good. I think Conte said it after the game and said it well. This is the gap that exists. I think it was an easy excuse for him to point just the difference of talent between his squad and the Chelsea squad, which is true. But I also thought that his setup, I was not too convinced with it. I thought the attitude of the Spurs players, and it's not easy when you concede so early away from home in a League Cup semi-final, albeit first leg. But I still think that Spurs got a lot of things wrong on top of clearly the difference of gap in talent.
See, my friends, the Mourinho maniacs on the internet, would immediately point it out. Says, oh, if Mourinho had said what Conte said, that the squad is, that there's a big gap between his squad and Chelsea, then we would all be criticizing Mourinho.
Yeah.
Instead, people are praising Conte for his honesty. Is that because the media have this nasty double standard and we have our agenda? In fact, I've got my anti-Mourinho agenda right now. No, but I think they do raise a fair question.
But Mourinho had two transfer windows to work in before even getting sacked. So,
all right.
I'm pretty sure that Mourinho had arrived before any transfer window like he did. And remember, when he did arrive, it was not like, oh, I've got the greatest squad in the world. Look, you know, Conte is just telling the truth.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think there is a parallel between Mourinho and Conte in the fact that they're forthright, especially when it suits them.
Yeah.
But equally, to come out and say this, it's not really that much of a surprise when, you know, he hasn't had a transfer window yet. He's been there 2 months. And I think I'm right in saying that apart from the Europa League game, this is the only game that they've lost, right?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
They've moved up the table in the Premier League and they've got games in hand. Lukaku. Because you were right, you called it on Monday.
Yeah.
He came out with an apology.
How would you qualify his body language on the video?
I don't know. I don't even like. You know my thoughts on this.
Yeah. I'm not sure that was necessary. The public video apology. That's all.
It's Chelsea communications people deciding like, oh, this is necessary. We need the public apology. Again, I think you're just building this up to something that is much bigger than what it is, what it needed to be. Tuchel maybe had his reasons for it. I think he was vindicated.
Yeah.
But it's clear that Lukaku was out there. He was motivated. Didn't miss
it. He wanted it, didn't he? You could tell he wanted it. He wanted that goal. And he missed a couple of really good chances. The header, then the shot on the Werner pass. It was not meant to be this time. But I think it was important that he played the whole 90 minutes to start with. And that he showed so much willingness. Of course, he would. But I think now he can move on. Tuchel can move on. The whole club can move on.
I still think we're going to look back on this and be like, what the hell was that? Was this all really, really necessary?
Yeah, it was pretty avoidable.
But look, if it makes, as we said before, if it makes Tuchel have more of a grip on his squad, if it somehow increases him and is good for Chelsea, then more power to him. But I do think it, in my view, I think the whole thing was OTT. And we'll come to realize that later. Jules, we touched upon this. Tuchel made a bunch of changes. He said that they were enforced changes. He saw what was a, what looked to me like a back four, certainly. Malang Sarr and Rudiger in the middle. Thiago Silva, of course, testing positive for COVID, so it was another defender down. What I thought was really funny after the game was they interviewed on television, they interviewed Hakim Ziyech, who I thought had a phenomenal game. And they're like, tell us about the new, you know, the formation looks slightly different out there. I'm like, what kind of questions are these? Like, he's playing four at the back. It changed to the three
that they've played since day one.
No question about that. But what I'm saying is, like, it was different.
It was,
and this is not an experiment. I think that we're going to see again. Although Ziyech said something which struck me. He said, well, with the back four, we can be a little bit freer to go forward. Mm. And I do wonder, I mean, the reason you don't do it is because you don't want Alonso on the back four on his own, you know, if he comes forward.
But if
Alonso's just going to sit, Alonso actually played years ago. He's played center back, too, in a three, right?
Yeah.
I do kind of wonder, if you wanted to switch things around in certain situations with James and Chilwell being injured and just have fullbacks who sit and just be even more free to attack and press high up the pitch, maybe that's not... Could that be a viable plan B?
I think it could be. Yeah, definitely. And I think you need your wide players then offensively to do a lot of the work creative-wise, because you don't have any wing-backs that can cross the ball and that will offer you an option there. But for someone like Ziyech, you could see why this is a better system for him, more than the back three and wing-backs, definitely, because he doesn't have to come inside as much. You know, he can stay closer to the touchline like he used to at Ajax, because there's no one bombing up and down the flank behind him. So I think it will also depend who they play against and who Tuchel is starting. But certainly I think for some of those players, they're probably more comfortable in a system with a back four than with a back three. And for Ziyech, I mean, just spare a thought for him, because one of the passes of the season, that one for Werner, then just for him to realize, oh no, it's Timo Werner, no, he's never going to score. And he didn't score. He made the wrong call completely.
Okay, so I know this is difficult to describe without the video, but if you, this is worth seeing, because the pass is ridiculous.
Incredible.
He gets the ball. He's at the edge of the box. The goalkeeper, Lloris, is way out. And most people would say, like, oh, he's way out of his goal. The angle's really good. I will very calmly side foot this.
Exactly.
But because Werner knows that when he needs to be calm, he's never calm, he decides to try to chip it over the goalkeeper.
Exactly.
And, you know, he gets it about 6 feet off the ground.
Yeah,
and
Lloris is just terrible.
But you got to buy his confidence, right? He just he's the energizer, but he just keeps going.
I know, man. I know. And I was only joking of, you know, before the Timo Werner fans come and abuse me. But that ball from Ziyech.
Well, both of them.
That diagonal was incredible. Yeah, both of them, his mum and dad. The pass from Ziyech was just incredible. And this is what he can bring you. And I know we haven't seen enough of Ziyech in that kind of form. But I think it's a really good thing for Chelsea that Morocco didn't call him and Vahid Halilhodžić didn't call him for the AFCON, and he can stay and just bring you something a bit different, especially as you mentioned, if they go for a back four a bit more often. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw another back four against Chesterfield in the FA Cup, for example, at the weekend, just to get that formation going a bit. Ziyech can start again and others, and you know, it's a good run out.
Final word on just to wrap Chelsea, I need to get your thoughts on Kai Havertz. Because obviously, and this ties a little bit with Lukaku. So if Lukaku is going to be a regular now, you know, going back to the beginning of the things he said. Small thing on Lukaku. One of the things I completely missed this in the interview, but it was pointed out by Christophe Terreur, a very talented Belgian journalist.
Yeah,
he said Lukaku said that he had never scored against a Conte team. So he really wanted to succeed against them. But he did when he was playing at Manchester United. and he scored. He never, he said never won against a Conte team.
Right.
But he did when he was playing for Manchester United, which is another weird thing. I'm starting to wonder about Lukaku's state of mind when he gave that whole interview.
I know.
But that's an aside. We'll leave that speculation on one side. But he's going to play up front. There's been talk about the formation and stuff. Lukaku in a one, Lukaku in a two. In some ways, when you play that front triangle of Mount and somebody else and a striker in front, a lot of times the way it works, it's really a one plus two up front, or it can be if you do certain movements.
Yeah.
Does it need to be for Lukaku to shine? Like, in other words, is he better off with Mount behind and Werner or Havertz running off him?
I don't know. I still think the front two is better for him. You know, of course, Lautaro was the perfect partner, and that partnership was great. Chelsea don't have a Lautaro in their squad, and even if they had, I don't think Tuchel would change anything.
Werner can't be your Lautaro?
Definitely no.
Okay.
Definitely no.
But that brings me to Havertz.
Yeah.
So I still feel that other than, and you really see this when you see Havertz in the flash, even if he's having a bad game, you realize that I think he's really, really special. And you realize why he spent so much money. But then I also feel like it never comes together for him with any kind of consistency.
Oh, not enough,
I kind of feel that I still don't know what his best position is. A person I feel vindicated is when they signed him, I said Havertz is a project. Because people told me Havertz is a project.
Yeah.
And he is a project.
Yeah, completely.
We're not going to see Havertz the finished footballer. We haven't seen that yet.
No, we haven't seen
We might
seen
see
that
it yet. Next year, maybe the year after.
Yeah. And I think Bayer Leverkusen, they were certainly playing a formation that suited him perfectly. And he was the big star and he was young. And I think this...
Yeah, but the formation basically consisted of, it's mad Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah.
And let Havertz do whatever he wants because he's so much better than everybody
and all
else
the service, and all the service, everything was built around him. This is not the case at Chelsea and won't be the case anytime soon. So find him a position, and maybe you're right. Maybe Tuchel should try the Mount Havertz behind Lukaku. I think he's tried a little bit earlier in the season, but not much. Maybe that's the way. I think you need a lot of mobility to play in those two tens, inside tens, behind a striker like Lukaku. And I'm not sure he's got that. I'm not sure he's good enough to hold the ball up with his back to goal with a big centre back behind him or big midfielder. He's much better when he's got the goal in front of him, as you saw with the goal that he scored against Spurs and the run that he made for the Alonso pass. That's perfect. I think he struggled more when he's got the goal behind him, which is something that Lautaro is very good at, for example, to play with Lukaku. So
is Pulisic a better option? I mean, he's obviously also has the back to goal issues.
Yeah,
he's built.
Similar one.
But he's a very technically sharp player. He's faster, obviously.
Yeah, the mobility is key.
And he's also, for a guy who's supposedly a superstar, he doesn't have the superstar mentality in terms of, he's very much a team player. I mean, I think this is the thing. Lukaku, I mean, we always say this, great players have to know when to take charge and when to make it about themselves and take responsibility and when to be team players. I feel Lukaku and Pulisic, both of them, their predisposition is very much to work for the team, more so than some other players.
Yeah, definitely.
Could that be a better option than Werner and Lukaku?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not keen on the Werner-Lukaku partnership at all. And I like Pulisic. You saw the goal against Liverpool. That run he made, inside was perfect. I don't think Havertz makes those runs. I mean, I know he scored.
He'll score differently.
Yeah, exactly. So, I can see. In a way, I think Tuchel has too many options and still hasn't found the right one, what the right trio is up front. And I hope for Chelsea, and I think he needs to find it quickly to get as much from it as possible. It's good to rotate and change and do this and do that, but I think if he could be convinced with a set from three, that'd be better. And I think Pulisic, Mount and Lukaku could be that one.
All right, let's talk Spurs and the great Conte project.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that they were very poor. They certainly were very poor. Despite them being very poor, and this is why we look at performances, we don't just look at goals. Because if you just look at highlights, just look at goals, you could say, okay, so Tanganga makes an enormous individual error on the first goal, which still, by the way, gets deflected in. I'm not 100% sure that shouldn't have been an own goal, by the way.
I think it's an own goal every day.
But I think it was credited to Hopkins.
Yeah, it was.
And on the second one, Tanganga again, I thought this was really weird. He, rather than heading the ball away, he seems to head it across the goal. And it hits, was it Ben Davis? But,
it
hits Ben Davis and it goes in, which...
This is on Lloris, though. It has to be on Lloris. Lloris is the one. There's no Chelsea players.
You're just picking
around
on him because he's not from Paris.
No. You know how much I love him. And you know, Lloris is my boy. But he would know that there's no Chelsea players around. He can easily come out and just, you know, just punch the ball away or something. And instead, I think he's a bit too...
But it's on Tanganga, too, because, I mean, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why would you ever head the ball across your goal, ever, in any context?
Yeah.
There's very few situations.
Yeah, I think it's a bit clumsy from Tanganga, definitely.
All right, so...
And that's unlucky. Yeah,
we've absolutely mullered, before, you were very... We've mullered Spurs, because this is a really bad performance.
Yeah.
That said, if I'm Conte, I can point to that and say, well, Jules, not only did I inherit this crappy squad of players...
Yeah.
Two of my back three, what should be my first choice back three... Eric Dier. I never thought I'd say, oh, Spurs really miss Eric Dier.
But it is.
But Dier's not there.
Yeah,
and that Romero fella, who they paid a ton of money for and was supposed to be transformational, he's hardly played this season. Obviously, he's out and he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
Is that a fair argument? That if you're playing Tanganga and Davis in your back three.
And Sanchez, yeah.
I mean, Sanchez, I think, is okay.
I know, but Sanchez in the sweeper role, you know.
It's not really what.
But no, you're right. I mean. Yeah, it's not ideal, especially when you face Chelsea strikers like the one we saw on Tuesday. I just don't think it's a soul. I was very surprised with the 3-4-3 against the Chelsea team that played with the back four. I really thought that he would put an extra man in midfield. You're away from home, you've got a second leg at home coming up. I don't think he needed to go with Lucas Moura, Son and Kane. Keep Son and Kane, they will run in behind, have another midfielder. And use that to be solid in midfield to protect your back three.
Go with Winks, Skip, and Højbjerg.
Yeah, for example, even put Ndombele for just an hour or 45 minutes because he will bring you a bit more of creativity and technical ability to keep the ball. You knew what Chelsea were going to do to you.
You know why he didn't do it? Because this is Conte, and this is all about the patterns of play.
No, I know, but he did it against Liverpool at home.
Sorry?
He did it against Liverpool at home. And he played just a 4-2 with Son and Kane, and that was and an extra man in midfield, and that worked well for that kind of game. Chelsea played different.
It was Dele Alli though in midfield in that game.
So Dele Alli and Ndombele and Winks.
Right, and Dele Alli was shading forward a lot more.
He was
basically playing the Lucas Moura role, just more central.
Yeah, but more defensive as well. You know, than Lucas Moura. I just thought that formation didn't help them either at all. Completely.
This team is missing a lot of things, right? I think in terms, I'm not going to just make it about quality, because I think, you know, Ndombele is a very talented player who, for many different reasons, hasn't produced.
Yeah.
Dele Alli, we've seen him produce in the past. So it's not about that. But in terms of the types of players that Conte wants, if you had Conte's wish list, then don't give me names necessarily, but
no.
But roles, right?
Yeah.
They keep getting linked to a striker with the presumption that Kane's going to go. We don't know if Kane's going to go. Although there's still the mystery that we flagged at the time that City are now down two players, Mendy and Ferran Torres, and, you know, who knows. But what do you think he needs to bolster most?
I think he needs a creative player in midfield, someone who is better than Ndombele or certainly more consistent than Ndombele.
And someone better than Harry Winks.
Yeah.
Who is his... The little Iniesta.
Yeah, exactly. But like, you know, a Christian Eriksen type of player, if you want. I think he needs a deeper midfielder who can pass the ball, like a Brozovic, for example. You know, again, this is a position that is so important in his formation, especially if you just play with the front two. Let's say that going forwards, in most of the big games, he would just play Son and Kane up front. So then you will have to find five in midfield, in the 3-5-2. So you've got your two wing-backs, Reguilón on the left or Sessegnon, and then Emerson Royal, let's say, on the right-hand side, or Doherty, or whoever you want. So then it's the other three that you need, and you need one holding, like Brozovic, but who is capable of passing the ball. You know, I don't think Højbjerg has a lot of qualities and runs a lot and works hard, and that's great. Doesn't have the passing quality that...
He doesn't have the passing quality of Brozovic. I think Højbjerg's okay for that role.
Yeah. But I think he wants someone who can dictate the play a bit more than just Højbjerg.
See, I suspect what he feels, in addition to another central defender, because I think the doubt's gonna be out there for Romero, and you can always upgrade that position. And Conte's always liked having a lot of options.
Yeah.
I think he's actually somebody with creativity and quality. The reason Lucas Moura plays so much is because he's the only one who really has that in the mix.
Yeah,
he would like to have a different sort of player, and it could be the third, midfielder.
Yeah,
it could be a guy in the hole. It could be in a 3-4-2-1, a guy with Son maybe starting from wider positions, but somebody who can do that consistently, I think, is pretty critical to what he wants to play.
Definitely. Because January is big for him.
January is really, really big for them. I don't know how much they can spend, and I think a lot of it obviously will be conditioned by the Kane situation. On Harry Kane, he started scoring again.
Yeah, 2-2 before the Watford game of the weekend.
Which is good.
And then he was very average against Watford and dreadful against Chelsea.
Do you see him playing differently? Do you see him perhaps dropping deeper less to get the ball like he did before?
I don't know. I have to say, I don't know if it's the team around him and that he doesn't get enough help. But I really struggle to understand how he can sometimes be at this kind of level. I really do. And okay, if they don't create chances for you, it's very difficult to score or to play a big role. But he used to do much more than that, and now he doesn't anymore. So I don't know if Conte says, "I want you to, you have to stay up there, stop dropping like you used to, like be almost a 9 and a 10." Maybe, although I think that would be a bit counterproductive. But I don't know. I find it quite sad, you know.
My friends, it's a difficult season. Mourinho maniacs on social media would point out, "Haha, he scored a ton of goals and was one of the best strikers in the world under Mourinho. Under Conte, he's not. Clearly, it's got to be Conte's fault." Not fair, is it?
No, it's not. And I don't know. He was struggling before with Nuno. You know, Conte arrived. I think it would take a bit of time. I don't know. I find it quite sad to see the kind of form that, or the struggles that he has more than not so far this season.
We still think, are they favourites to finish top four? Of those four teams?
I think being knocked out of Europe, albeit the way they did, was a blessing in disguise, massively.
Even in disguise. It's just a blessing.
Yeah, blessing, full stop, you're right. If they can strengthen the squad in January, I think they will have a big chance with Arsenal, West Ham and United. But I think it will be on margins, really. I think that race for fourth place is going to be huge. And when we saw again yesterday, but even against Watford, even against Palace, you know, it was not great for the first 25 minutes. So there's still a lot of work to be done.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Spurs. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Ed Woodward will leave Manchester United by the end of this month. It's confirmed. His current deputy and flight enthusiast, Richard Arnold, takes over. Jules Tomeny Woodward is a source of all problems at the club. So surely this will fix everything, right?
Yeah, of course. Just like this. Hey, Ed is out and his twin brother is in. So what do you expect? I think Richard Arnold is very similar to Ed Woodward. I still don't think that the right profile for this kind of job, but Arnold might prove me wrong. But with Woodward, he was a great servant to the club in his first role and bringing a lot of revenue in. not so much in the second part of his or second job that he had at that club. This is Manchester United. Well, and this is a huge, huge job.
There's still a ton of revenue coming in, which I think is part of the reason why the Glazers really aren't too bothered and the enterprise value of the club keeps going up. So, hey, whatever. I'm wondering, I don't know Richard Arnold. I generally mistrust
people. No, but you know the background and everything.
I know the background, and I know that he's been Ed's friend forever since they lived above the sofa shop and on the Fulham Road in London. I think it was the New King's Road, actually, in London. But, and I'm naturally mistrustful of people with two first names, like Richard Arnold. Yeah. It's just not really appropriate. That said, I'm imagining Richard Arnold's like, all right, I'm stepping into the big chair. I'm going to get all the crap that was thrown at Ed. I still get to make the definitive decisions. Maybe I should be more aware of my weaknesses, perhaps, or the people who are negotiating deals, or the people who are identifying talent. Maybe, since I have the clout now, I should go tell the Glazers, hey, I'm going to handle all the operations and everything. I'm going to approve the budgets, do all the commercial stuff like I was doing before, and I'll be the big boss. But I'm going to get somebody who really knows what they're doing to head up the football side. It might not be Ralf Rangnick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just wondering. I'm going to go. I think that's what Richard Arnold should do.
I'm liking your optimism so far.
No, but you agree that that's what Arnold should do.
Yeah.
He's still the big boss. I'm just wondering. I can think of somebody who's won accolades left, right, and center, who's considered a footballing, a football management genius, who is about 30 miles down the road at another really big club, a rival club, in fact, and who after 10 years is leaving that club. Would it just be like the ultimate villain story if they went, if they announced Michael Edwards as the new? No. That wouldn't happen. Yeah?
No, I don't know. I mean, that would be
I'm just chucking
special.
It out there. That would be bold.
Yeah.
I don't think it would ever happen. No. But it would be bold. You heard it here first.
Gab, the fallout from talking about United, the fallout from Ralf Rangnick's first defeat on Monday night at Old Trafford against Wolves continues to dominate the headlines. But according to reports, United are ready to spend in January. So all good, yeah?
Yeah, so there's a very funny thing that happens in the media, right? And you saw this ahead of Conte's return to Spurs when everybody had a deep dive into Conte and Chelsea and what went wrong. And that's fine, right?
Yeah.
But they all had the same stories because it's the same people briefing the same stories. And we see it with United, right? Everybody's just like, oh, United have 17 players they want to get rid of, you know, either because contracts expire and so on, and Rangnick's going to clean house. Look, it's good that he has money to spend because he needs to strengthen.
Yeah.
But you need to also realize he's not the permanent manager. So this is a difficult thing, right? Personally, as a club, I wouldn't say if Rangnick goes and says, like, yeah, I need somebody to do the pressing here, like Sabitzer and blah, 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 and this guy can do that. I would say, Ralf, we may have
but a isn't
completely
that
different
part of the problem then? Even for the players, even within the dressing room, that you know that when he talks, he might not be there in 4 months' time.
You nailed it. And that's fine. He's an interim boss. Act like an interim boss. Barcelona beat Deportivo Linares in the Spanish Cup, but Jules, it's a slog, and Xavi has to send on the cavalry at halftime by putting in Frankie de Jong, Dembele, and Gerard Pique.
Yeah, because they were 1-0 down at halftime, Gab, and not that they were playing badly, but they just got caught, and already you could see that the upset that we've had previously in this competition, not with Barcelona last season, but Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, losing to lower league teams. And you think, that second half is going to be interesting. They turn it around and score two goals in 6 minutes. And in the end, it would be fine. I think they
Dembele hit the woodwork too.
Yeah. But the margin are really thin. We knew that with this Barca team and we show that again. But it was as long as they qualify, I think that was the most important. And Real Madrid are also through. Gab beating Alcoyano 3-1, although they came back to 1-1 in that game, the lower league team. This was the team that knocked out Zinedine Zidane's team, Real Madrid team, last season, by the way. So that's improvement, right?
I think everybody was so, you know, these guys are all superstitious. They're like,
we
can't screw this up. He changed things around, as you would expect, because, you know, the rotation is necessary. I think he trusted his players. In the end, a little bit fortunate, especially with the third goal, where it went down as a goalkeeping own goal, where he goes and was it Isco or Asensio?
Yeah.
He absolutely wipes him out. I mean, I don't know. They're through. That's what matters.
Yeah, exactly.
Lionel Messi is now testing negative for COVID and is back at
Paris
Saint-Germain. Jules, everyone's delighted.
Yes.
Look at the joy in your face.
He's back. They play Lyon away on Sunday, the big game to come back with Ligue 1. So everybody's hoping that he could be ready for that. The funny thing is, he's just come back, yeah? By the end of the month, he will go back. because obviously
you have to make up the qualifiers.
Exactly,
yeah.
The qualifiers are taking place in South America, so it's a bit crazy. But he's there. I don't know in what kind of shape, fitness-wise, you know. But hey, I'm happy that he's back in the city at least. Lorenzo Insigne has moved to Toronto. I keep saying Toronto. This summer is about to become reality. Gab, there's still a lot of uncertainty over just how much he will earn, but it's going to be a lot. You still the net and gross.
There's no doubt in my mind that the net gross thing is a mistake. Just because of logic
tells
me that.
It's a
that
lot.
Said, others are sticking with it. Others are sticking with the fact that those numbers are gross numbers. Most recently, The Athletic, were obviously reporting from the Toronto side.
Yeah.
They're talking of a fee of around, they're talking about he's going to earn about $8 million a season net, which, funny enough, is $15 million gross, which, funny enough, is a little more than the $11.5 million net that was being put out by some people here. So I think that's it. Like, it's a ton of money.
Anyway,
yeah. I'm happy for him. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these last 6 months at Napoli goes, because he's going to say, I'm motivated, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to leave. You know, I want to leave with something important, leave something important behind. I think it's also a statement for MLS, because he's going to be, again, the highest paid MLS player ever.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Football League has agreed to Liverpool's request to postpone their League Cup first leg semi-final game, which is due to be played on Thursday night against Arsenal. This comes after a COVID outbreak that forced the closure of the club's training ground. Jules, some aren't happy about this. They say double standards.
Yeah, no, I can see that point, Gab. I can. I mean, for example, in France, in the French Cup games, the federation was like, we don't care how many players are, play the kids, play your reserve team, but we have to play those games now. I can also see the point of view from Liverpool saying, look, they had so many positive cases, not just, you know, within the squad, but at the training ground, within the club overall. Listen, I guess on the other hand, they give the second leg return now at Arsenal, so you...
If Arsenal are happy with it, you could say, who cares, it's only the League Cup. That said...
That's an advantage to Arsenal now that they didn't have before.
I think the issue is also, there's no transparency in this, and the rules, stupidly, are different in the League Cup.
We've said many times,
from the
Premier
League, so...
Yeah, and speaking of postponement, no fewer than 4 Serie A games scheduled on Thursday today as we record the show have been postponed, and there could be more to come this weekend. I think, was it 87 players testing positive or something like that in Serie A?
I think it's more than that, actually.
It's crazy. Cases everywhere.
But, you know, we talked about sort of stupid rules and stupid situations. Well, welcome to the land of stupid, which is Serie A right now, and the way they're handling this, because... So 4 of the Serie A games have been postponed because local health authorities can stop games, but then the league has said, well, no, these games aren't to be postponed. They're going to go ahead. Obviously, the local health authority trumps the league, but now you're going to have all sorts of legal wrangles about what to do. It was grotesque this weekend because they have a rule now that if you want to play, you have to be fully vaccinated in Serie A. That's a government rule, which is why reportedly Chris Smalling is rushing over to get fully jabbed. But the situation with Napoli, for example, one of the local health authorities in Naples, I think the one with the stadium, says, oh, yeah, you guys can go. And then the one which is where the training ground is, says, you guys can't go.
Why'd you have
come
two different
back
ones?
So now they traveled. They're playing Juventus. They traveled.
Yeah.
And now they've got 3 of the players who went who haven't had their boosters. I think it's Rahmani, Zielinski, and Laboka. Those 3 guys have now have to go into isolation. It's an absolute mess. I wouldn't be surprised if there's more cancellations.
Crazy.
Guys, make the rules ahead of time. Come on,
I know,
man. We all remember Christian Eriksen's shocking cardiac arrest at the Euros. He's now had a defibrillator fitted. It's called an ICD. He's been training in Switzerland because he's not allowed to train and compete in Italy, where he lives. So he's obviously under contract with Inter Milan. He says he wants to play in the World Cup. His agent suggests he'd love a return to the Premier League. Your thoughts, Jules?
Yeah, we mentioned that a bit on Tuesday's show, didn't we? I think if he feels like he can play, that's great. I think he's brave. Glenn Hoddle came out this week and saying he's brave if he wants to go back playing, which is to his credit. I'm sure if he's allowed to play in the Premier League, in another league, and I think there'd be clubs for him there, because if he's fully fit and really there's no scares to have or issues or anything, he's still an amazing player, really. He needs to get back to fitness and match fitness more than his own fitness. But like, as much as I would love to see him back on the pitch, I still think it's such a tough decision to take from himself, you know, from his point of view, and for a club to take him on too. Meanwhile, Gab, another talented midfielder, is making the opposite decision. You wrote about Eriksen and David Proper, who's walking away from PSV Eindhoven at 30, the former Brighton and Netherlands midfielder, with 18 months left on his contract, simply because he fell out of love with the game, with COVID and everything.
Yeah, it's not just COVID. He just says, I don't like football culture. I don't really enjoy football anymore. Yeah. It's weird because the column I wrote is kind of like this incredible juxtaposition between the two. Did you know they made their professional debuts on the same day in the same league, obviously in the Dutch league.
Yeah, yeah.
One was against, I always thought this was funny, NEC Nijmegen. The other one's against NAC Breda. NEC versus NAC, one of those weird Dutch things. Look, I think I make the point in the column that both these moves are dictated by love and courage, and it just leads you to different places. In Eriksen's place, love for the game means continuing, and it takes courage to do that, because I'm sorry, an ICD is not risk free. The doctors will say, oh, you can do it, but he's always going to be at risk.
These things
break and whatever. And for Proper, the same thing. He's leaving a lot of money on the table, but he's deciding that there's other things that are more important to him at this moment in time. That takes courage too. And if the love isn't of the game, the love of your work isn't there, why should it define your life? Why should it define who you are?
You wonder how many players play after falling out of love with, and that could explain why the level is not as good, or, you know, why they play the way they play.
More broadly, we've all been around a whole bunch of ex-players, and I think it's difficult for people who aren't to understand this, but these are people who from the age of, become a professional, most likely from the age of 14 or 15.
Yeah.
This is all you do. And then you find yourself at 35, where quote-unquote normal people have lives and built families, and you're thrown back into civilian life.
Completely.
That is extremely, extremely jarring. And there's some people like Proper who evidently don't want his football career to be the thing that defines him as who he is, because he's got another 50 years on this planet.
Yeah.
Aaron Ramsey, talking of, has rejected a move to Burnley, but Juventus coach Max Allegri says he's free to leave. Jules, he has 18 months left and a huge contract. Is he going to become Gareth Bale 2.0?
Well, I think there's a bit of that. There's rumors that his agent also has a big payout coming out if he stays in Italy.
Baldwin?
Yeah, if he stays in Italy after the summer, which would mean they're not really encouraging Aaron to move. I don't know. I would want to believe that he wants to play. He knows he's not going to play if he stays. If he stays until the end of this season, the next season, that's not going to change. So coming back to the Premier League, going somewhere else, but at least in a project where you're going to be part of it, you're going to play, he still has a lot of good years ahead of him to offer, you know. So I would want to see him move and play. And I think that would be good for everyone. Him, Juve, Allegri, whoever you want.
Yeah, I still get a feeling he's going to play more for Wales than for Juve if he
stays. But going back to Proper, it can't be nice if you're a player under contract, especially at a big club, and not even being the match squad week in and week out. That can't be enjoyable. Do you know what I mean? Even if the big money coming in. To the point that you wonder if at some point Ramsey would fall out in love with football if things don't change for him. Do you see what I mean?
I don't know if he cares, to be honest. The same way Gareth Bale doesn't care. I think it's very obvious that these people don't care. You know, I don't know. I think Bale's case is obviously extreme, but I don't see Ramsey being far off that.
Right. And sticking with Juventus, Allegri also said that Morata is going nowhere. This comes after the Catalan media assure us that he was moving to Barcelona, Gab.
Yeah, and Allegri knows the situation, and he says it's going nowhere. He's not bluffing. It's difficult. People don't seem to get in their heads that this Spanish spending cap thing is real. We'll see what happens with Ferran Torres, but that is the priority before you start worrying about Morata and other things. Arsenal have been charged by the Football Association for their players' conduct after Gabriel's red card in the defeat to Man City on Saturday. Jules, what does this mean?
What do you mean? They were charged or what they did?
They were charged.
Well, yeah, I think the club would get fined. That's it. So, you know, this is it. It was, they didn't like the way the players reacted after the penalty was awarded. Maybe the tempering of the penalty spot too. I don't know, but yeah.
Doesn't really mean anything. Okay, fine.
The Times are reporting that Britain and Ireland are on the verge of not going for a bid for the 2030 World Cup, but instead the 2028 Euros, Gab. What's going on? Do they think they have more chance to get the Euros instead of the World Cup?
I think they do believe they have more of a chance to get the Euros than the World Cup. UEFA's will probably back just one European bid. Obviously, Spain and Portugal are in the running as well. There was also some suggestion that, this was in the Times story, I don't know him personally, that Prince William, who is the honorary head of the FA, he didn't want to be associated with a losing bid because obviously he was associated with a losing 2018 bid.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really make any sense. And so he said, well, let's withdraw it because he thinks they're going to lose. It's great and all that you're into football, Prince William, but, you know, if you're going to be part of the team, be part of the team. People have worked on this. But no, I think 2028, probably a better option for Britain and Ireland. The Africa Cup of Nations kicks off on Sunday with Cameroon facing Burkina Faso and Ethiopia taking on Cape Verde. Jules, the bookies have Senegal as favorites, followed by Algeria, Egypt, and Ivory Coast. Who you got?
Yeah, I think Senegal have a great squad, of course. They've never won this competition. We saw the president yesterday coming out and meeting the players and said, you know, we want you to bring back the trophy here.
What's he going to say?
No, I know, but, you know, I don't know. You could go, like, you know, go and do your best and hope for a semi-final spot or whatever. Obviously, they lost the final against Algeria in the last edition of the tournament. Algeria, who are the other big, big favourite, because Jamel Belmadi is doing an amazing job there. They won the Arab Cup as well.
And they had that crazy undefeated streak as well, right?
Yeah. And they have this amazing, also, generation. They've got young players coming through. There's a lot of youngsters, by the way. Young players, some that play in Belgium, some that play in France. Hannibal Mejbri, the Manchester United Paris born and bred prodigy, of course, with Tunisia, that has yet to play for the first team at United, but I think could be very much involved and a key part of what Tunisia are going to do in this competition. So I think it's going to really be fascinating. I hated the disrespect for the competition, especially coming from here, from England, before. Now I really hope that people are going to watch and enjoy it, because I think it's going to be very enjoyable.
I think Egypt always often get, you know, they're so stereotyped as playing a certain way, but it's a way that yields results.
I
wouldn't write them off at all.
No, of course.
Before you
Ivory
Coast, Salah to the
Nigeria, mix. Ghana. There's a lot. I think it's a very open tournament, but Senegal and Algeria have to be, I think, the two strongest.
What about my Super Eagles? We have a lot of fans.
Yeah, of course,
I have
Nigeria.
A soft spot for them.
For yeah.
But no Osimhen and no Dennis.
That's the thing. They're not at their absolute best in terms of having the best talent with them. Obviously, the Guyana Horn change of managers, I don't think, helped either. So we'll see. But yeah, Nigeria, of course, have to be amongst the favourites. The Premier League has written to clubs telling them, Gab, that unvaccinated players will face tougher restrictions in trainings and games. Right now, 1 in 6 are not vaccinated. What impact do you think this will have? And this is to be taken seriously? Or?
To be honest, I think, first of all, this is what's helpful, right? So the Premier League, you know, they have their little chirpers leak or brief, as they like to say here, to the media. They're like, we're writing to the clubs. But then we don't know what those increased restrictions are. So I don't know.
Exactly. That's
the restrictions aren't going to be any worse than back when they had the bubbles, when things first came out. I don't think it's going to be any worse than that protocol. Like, 1 in 6 Premier League footballers are not fully vaccinated. There are some of them, I think we know, we've written a story about them, who don't care about this. It's not that they're not getting vaccinated because they have health concerns or they're against vaccination. They just don't get around of it. They don't care. They're irresponsible. So maybe if you inconvenience them, some of those people will get vaccinated. For the ones who don't care, or for the ones who believe vaccines are wrong, and I've gotten stick for saying, you are entitled to your own opinion, I don't think having more tests and whatever is going to change their mind, right? These people, the ones who aren't idiots, know that there is a global pandemic. I still think I'm not at risk, and so, or not at the same level of risk, so I'd rather not get vaccinated. Extra restrictions at Premier League games and in training isn't going to change your mind. Kieran Trippier's move to Newcastle for around 50 million euros looks set to be sealed the next few days. Jules, does he move the needle and keep the Toon Army up?
I think he's helping. It's not the answer. It's not just on him that he's going to keep them
right
up.
Right back was the problem.
No. It's better than what they had. So as long as they can improve every position they want to improve and get an upgrade, he's certainly an upgrade to Monquillo or whoever, Kraft or whoever played right back before for them. So this is good. He's got experience. He wanted to come back also for family reasons, plus the money, of course. So good. It's just not enough. But let's hope for them that they can convince more players like him to be to join them and keep them up.
I'm curious what Atleti do, because obviously if you go big, if you keep stick with the back three in most games, which we assume you will, then you've got Marcos Llorente.
Yeah.
But if you go back four, I mean, Versaico, come on, man.
Yeah, he's not good enough. But, you know, I think he can do a job. FIFA revealed their shortlist of goalkeepers for their best awards. Gab, it's Neuer, Mendy and Donnarumma. Who do you got? Let me guess.
I will tell you, given that it is a 2021 award over the year, I think Mendy should win.
Yes!
I think Mendy me will too. Win because it's over the course of the year.
Go, Edu, go.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
L'Équipe newspaper in France, we're going all French this week,
of course.
Have revealed their 2021 Onze Mondial,
yeah,
and their best 11. This is a bunch of dudes that keep making a list of best 11, right? And
I know it's that people voting, readers.
Oh, the readers of L'Équipe.
Readers vote, the people from who write for L'Équipe, L'Équipe TV as well, and L'Équipe website.
Does it get weighted?
Yeah, loads of people vote.
Does Pierre Menez's view, is that worth more?
Not anymore. But people at L'Équipe who watch a lot of football and report on a lot of football.
But
this is serious stuff. Okay, what are you insinuating?
No, I'm sure it is. What's interesting, and by the way, internet trolls, get ready. Their best 11 doesn't include anyone named Lionel, Cristiano, Erling, Kylian, or Neymar. So I'm assuming, and I give credit for them, they're not worried about fanboy social media warriors going after them, right?
They're not completely. I'm.
Are you calling up the list? I can tell you.
Yeah,
I've memorized it.
I
Marquinhos
forgot.
Is in there. Ruben Dias is in there.
Yeah.
Teo Hernandez is in there. Jorginho, of course, is in there.
Yeah.
Kante is in there, even though he played like 10 games this year. But, you know, I guess he's a bit French. De Bruyne is in there. Benzema is in there. I'm assuming Lewandowski is.
Lewandowski and Benzema are the two up front. You're right.
That's pretty good.
But this is it, you know, this is what I mean. This is very serious.
Is this more credible than the FIFA Pro 11?
Well, definitely, I think. Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne too. There's obviously a lot of players from the Premier League in there. Trent, our right back. Teo Hernandez, our boy, our left back, which is deserved too. So I think this is a very, very...
I have to have a French goalkeeper, so it's Mendy, yeah?
Yeah.
Franco-Senegalese.
Exactly, yeah, Franco-Senegalese. But yeah, I think it's a very, very realistic 11.
By the way, since I mentioned the FIFA World 11, and given he has a lifetime subscription, when we mentioned Barcelona earlier, we didn't mention the fact that this was Dani Alves' first appearance on his return for the club.
Yes.
So shout out to Dani Alves.
Yeah, shout out to Dani Alves.
Exactly. Although he doesn't make the Onze Mondial list, funnily enough.
Not yet. And more from L'Équipe, Gab, they estimate that Erling Haaland, and reported, will demand 30 to 35 million euros a season over 6 years in his new club for his new deal. They will also have to pay the new club, that is, €20 million for Mino Raiola as an agent commission and for Alfie Allen as a father commission, I guess. Plus, of course, the 70 or 75 million euros depending of release clause. That's a 300 million euro package.
Yeah, but that's for 6 years. Although you know that after a couple of years, he's going to go knock on the door and say, hey, how about we extend this contract?
Yeah.
It's the price of talent. It is a ton of money. I mean, 40 million in commission. But then again, those figures that were leaked when he moved to Borussia Dortmund, you know, I think it was 10 and 10, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm not mistaken, right?
Exactly.
At some point, you see the enormous bargaining power. And if you just view this for a minute from Haaland's perspective, right? By When he moved there, fee wasn't great. His salary isn't enormous, right? It's about $6 million. But crucially, he said, let me put this release clause in.
Exactly.
The money that's not going to go to Dortmund is going to go, okay, to Mino, and it's going to go to my dad. Where do you think, when Alfie Holland one day leaves us and goes to the great place in the sky, where do you think all this money's going to go?
Exactly.
It's going back to Erling.
Exactly.
I mean, these are enormous figures. And the one other thing point to make on this is, we talked about the caps on commissions to be paid in deals. Now, FIFA hoped to make this official by the fall of 2022, so it wouldn't affect the summer transfer market.
That's right. That's
which is when that clause kicks in and is valid. So you know that'll be an extra incentive for them to move him this summer.
But you know, Kylian Mbappe's numbers are similar, apart from the release clause because he's on free. But it would be the same commission, more or less.
Well, Mama Mbappe gets
Papa 40, Mbappe, and then
Papa
the
and
lawyer,
Mama get between them. They share 40 million.
They would get high commission, maybe not as high as 40, but not far. Wages would be exactly the same. Length of the contract would be exactly the same. This is so for Real Madrid, for example, just quickly to go back on that, to sign them both is one 300 million package and the other one would be around the 200 million package. So it's a 500 million euro package if you want to sign them both, which is huge, of course.
That's an extraordinary way to look at it. Jules, let's check in on Ousmane Dembele's contract talks. Now he's being linked to Bayern, but only if Coleman leaves.
Yeah, only if Coleman leaves. Coleman, who's under contract until June 2023, but doesn't want to renew at the moment. So it's either you sell him this summer, or then he goes on a free like David Alaba did, last summer.
Why doesn't he want to renew?
I don't know. I think certainly for Coleman, I think the club feels that he wants, again, the demands are too high.
Is it that, or is it the fact that, you know, Sané's finally playing to his ability?
Because I think
Gnabry's sticking around. He doesn't want to be a third winger. Does he want?
I think he would play with Sané, and Gnabry would be the super sub. Certainly, that's the way Coman and his camp sees it. So, in that case, it looks to me that it's more about money.
Yeah.
And would Dembélé be the answer? I think Rummenigge is a huge fan. He's on a free in the summer, which I think would be a really good deal for Bayern.
Because he's on stupid money now. I know. How much of a pay cut is he going to take? But no, because we're talking 20 million euros a year, right? So rather than giving that money to Dembélé, and that's if Dembélé doesn't take a pay cut, I'd rather give it to Coleman.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe not all of it, but part of it. Coleman's already there. Nobody can do.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and they're roughly the same age, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Gab, last in the last show, you told us that Christoph Piontek was on his way back to Serie A from Hertha Berlin. He still is, but it's not Genoa. It's Fiorentina. And does that mean that Dusan Vlahovic then is going to go and replace him? I mean, don't tell me you replace Vlahovic with Piontek, please.
Okay. Well, it's really funny because, okay, first of all, this is an old school hijack deal, right? So the Hertha negotiate with Genoa, he's released and everything, and Fiorentina are like monitoring it.
Yeah, yeah, listening
and
at the door.
Like, oh, it's like, Krzysztof, come to us, not Genoa. We might have Champions League or at least Europa League next year. Plus, Florence is a nicer city than Genoa. Although there's no C, by the way, which is really important to some people. But the dude's Polish. He doesn't know what the C is.
Exactly.
He's from Gdansk, in which case it's a cold gray C.
All right.
I digress. Back to Piontek. So it was really funny because people immediately put 2 + 2 together and said, oh, look, if they're getting Piontek, then that means that Vlahovic, they're waiting and ready to sell Vlahovic now in January. Fiorentina go out of their way, but like literally a minute people speculate this, they start getting on the phones to transfer reporters and saying, no, not the case.
Not the case.
Because he's going to replace Kerkorin, who
he's not doing well.
People kind of forgot Kerkorin was even there. Kerkorin's this mystical figure at the club. Obviously, Piontek cannot replace Vlahovic.
Thank you.
But if he has to replace Kerkorin, who literally does nothing, then Piontek can probably do nothing just as well.
Yeah.
My understanding is that I think they probably would be okay with selling Vlahovic if they got, 75 million.
Yeah.
The problem is Vlahovic doesn't want to leave because it's not his interest. Not his interest. And he's made it very clear, his agents have, by demanding that enormous commission, he's just going to run down his contract.
Completely.
Well, we had a thriller in the French Cup. Seko Fofana, whose brother Wesley played. No, just kidding. No relation, right?
No relations at all.
he leads the comeback for Lens against arch rival Lille from 2-0.
That was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Tuesday night, you talked about stupidity before with COVID and etc. As you know, in France, we've got limited crowd capacity in stadiums to 5,000, but they put them all in the same stand. So there's no social distancing. I'm like, anyway. So only
Have they explained this? Because there's got to be people in France who said, like, you know.
But so club said, okay, why don't we do...
Why don't we spread them out?
Proportionally, but with the proportion of the size of your stadium. So, you know, 40,000, you can bring in 12, or whatever, or 15. But we space them out in the whole stadium, so...
But even then, if it's 5,000 all in one stand, there's no social distancing.
No, no, nothing at all. They were all, like, literally packed within each other, the Lens fans. But at least they saw an incredible comeback. The team was 2-0 down with only a few minutes to go. Seko Fofana scored two goals. The second one in the 93rd to get two penalties because it was penalty straight away. And then guess who scored the winning penalty? Seko Fofana again. I mean, the guy is incredible. I love him. I still think Lens signing him from Udinese is one of the greatest transfer coup in recent years. For 10 million euros, I think he's fantastic. Well done to him. Well done to Lens. Who are through to the next round?
It's funny because Udinese really, really liked him, but they're like, all right, 10 million.
Yeah,
no, nobody's going to offer this money.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to offer this
crazy,
money.
Crazy. More Barca moves, according to media reports, Gab. Philippe Coutinho is willing to leave the club because he plays so much, of course, and provided there's a project. We love that word, project. Gab, he's been linked to Aston Villa, for example. Is that project good enough for him?
I don't know what to say in terms of project. You know, like, he's come back.
Yeah.
He's proved his fitness. He's playing occasionally. He's in, he's out.
Yeah.
This is all the same. He's owed an enormous amount of money in the last 6 months of his contract. This is what it's all about.
Exactly.
Barcelona are effectively saying, hey, you can leave for free now, but he's not going to want to leave money on the table. So, personally, if I were Coutinho, rather than the project, I'd take the next 6 months finding a project.
Yeah.
I think he's going to play occasionally because Dembele's going to have his contractual issues. They got the kids. They're not bringing in many other people, I think. And then come back, be refreshed in the summer, and then look for the project.
Maybe.
Like, there's no point in you moving now, I think, unless you really find the project.
The project. Maybe he's with Stevie G's former teammate. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a project. Yeah. Luca Dean is still at Everton, but everybody's taking for granted that he'll leave. Jules, how do you see it? And, hey, let's mention Sven Botman, too.
Yes,
right?
Sven Botman. Is it a similar situation? I think there's enough interest for Dean to go. And as we know, Everton signed Mykolenko.
30, 35 million? Those are the prices?
That can't happen.
That can't be right,
no,
right?
No, and I think they know it. I think maybe that's what they put out, Everton. But I think when it comes down to... negotiating, I don't think that'd be the price. I think a loan with an option to buy could be a decent option for a lot of clubs, whether that Chelsea, who are quite keen but haven't started talking at all to Everton, whether it's another club maybe in another country. I think he fell out with Benitez, so forget about, I think, this season, because it hasn't worked out for him. Last season he was, I guess, already a bit on the way down compared to the standard that he set before. But still, there's a really good player in there, French international. So I think a lot of clubs should be looking at him.
Sure. Is this one of those situations where if he stays at Everton for 6 months, he's going to start getting antsy and worried about going to the World Cup?
World Cup, yeah. Especially in that position where there's a lot, I mean, not that Benjamin Mendy is in the running anymore, but still there's a lot of talented left backs. You're right. He could miss the train big time. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Former FIFA president Sepp Blatter has come out strongly against the Binary World Cup. Gab, are you surprised? Why? Who's asking him questions? Who is he talking to?
I don't know.
Who cares?
I don't know why this man is relevant still. But on the one hand, I'm not surprised, because obviously Sepp Blatter hates the current FIFA regime, partly because the current FIFA regime have taken legal action against him after his long ban, and basically said that FIFA was a corrupt organization and was toxic and so on, and they've had to clean up the giant turds he's left behind.
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course he's going to go against it. On the other hand, I'm a little bit surprised, because I didn't dig this out. Tarek Pena from the New York Times did. But, hey, guess who wrote an opinion column sort of some 15 years ago about how wonderful a biennial World Cup would be. That's right. One, Josef S. Blatter.
I wanted to ask you, what about Infantino coming out and say, hey, what about Euros every 2 years now? They, you know, it could be considered. We would be in favor. Like, what?
Because he's trying to give something back, right? That's part of the package. The idea is there's a major international competition every 2 years. Because otherwise, if you still have the Euros and the Copa America, if you have the Euros every 4 years, you're going to say, well, wait a minute. We're all competing for the same sponsors if you have a biennial World Cup. Say, well, that's okay. You have your Euros every 2 years as well.
Okay, so part of the strategy.
That had to be part of the strategy to give something back. But UEFA aren't buying it.
Yeah.
Michael Cousins has joined Venezia on loan from Bayern. Now, you may say this is little niche, Jules, but he was a highly rated youngster.
Yes,
he was the new Mesut Ozil. He was on loan in Marseille last season.
New Mesut Ozil?
That's what they said in Germany. Is he any good? Are we ever going to see him do anything? Please help my friends on the lagoon.
No, I know. That's why the question is there, because they're your friends.
No, you know. Because his wages are off of Bayern's books.
You can give him
the Kingsley Coman.
I mean, that one season at Gladbach, he was exceptional. He was an exceptional talent as a kid in France. You know, he's been with the France youth team since, I think...
He's 23 years old. 22.
He's still young, but we really thought that the move to Marseille, the loan to Marseille, could kick on the whole career or resume it, if you want.
Because it's such a wonderfully stable environment.
But that's not that.
The right
it's
place
just
for
there was
to
the
grow.
Passion that, you know, with that incredible left foot that he has and all the talent, we said, okay, this could be a good fit. It wasn't. It really wasn't. I don't know if Venezia would be the good fit. I hope for them because I really believe the talent is there. It's just there's no consistency. I think he needs to think a bit more as well. And to commit himself and get involved, you know, and get because I don't think he has that. He feels that he hasn't been treated right at Bayern in the sense that he never got his chance properly, and maybe he's got a point. Maybe there was never anything at training enough to grant that chance. So let's hope that maybe Serie A will be better for him.
Small team, they play attacking football.
Yeah.
I think most expect him to go down, so
there
isn't
work.
That much pressure necessarily.
Yeah, it could work.
We'll see.
Patrick Schick is the latest striker to be linked with a move to North London, with both Arsenal and Spurs reportedly interested. Gab, he's averaged more than a goal a game with Bayer Leverkusen in the Bundesliga this season.
That's right. He's scoring so much.
Euros was great for him.
But who's got? I think it's 16 goals in 14 games.
I mean, he's scored a quadruple and a hat trick almost back to back, or a brace. That helps a lot.
They still count, right?
Yeah, of course.
Well, honestly, when Killian does it, it's fine, right?
Well, of course,
Schick's not allowed to do it.
No, he is.
He'd be really interesting. I don't know. First of all, I don't understand what Bayer Leverkusen, like, why they're always struggling for money and they always have to sell, like, players, you know. But. It's an interesting one because he's such an unusual center forward, because he's obviously tall and he's got size.
Yeah.
He's extremely, extremely skillful, was also extremely inconsistent and has been extremely, extremely inconsistent, hasn't always come together. He's got, in some ways, he's got a little bit of the Zlatan.
The magic.
The Arnautovic,
Zlatan-like. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, sometimes he plays a little soft. Obviously Zlatan would never do. I don't really see him playing for a Conte team. I think Arsenal would probably be a better fit for him. But
remember when he broke through at Samp? How amazing he was! He was young. He was so. Some of the goals he scored then was incredible.
Yeah, and Roma signed the most complicated deal in the world to go and get him, and didn't quite work out. Yeah. But you know, he scored goals for big teams in the Bundesliga.
Great.
So
yeah.
And the talent's there. And I think he's still only 25 years old.
Yeah.
Former referee and, let's face it, friend of the show, Peter Walton, writing in the Times, says the current talent pool of Premier League match officials isn't particularly vast. Jules, do you agree with Captain Obvious?
Yeah, I do. Is he aware of him saying that the current referees are rubbish, apart from one and two, maybe?
It is, but Peter's too nice a guy.
I know. English people are always nice to say heavy criticism.
Yeah, but here's the key.
Nicely.
He says, we need to train more and do better.
Yeah,
you know, how about you open things up and just get the best referees in the world? Like, you get the best players in the world, the best coaches in the world.
Yeah, but
the richest
also,
owners
I think,
in the world.
That could be a good thing. But also, you know, within your country, make them better. Come on, it's not that hard.
Sometimes it's nature, not nurture.
It's true. Gab, remember the mysterious cryptocurrency company Three Key, who had this signed a commercial agreement with Manchester City? Well, City have terminated it.
Yes, this is the company. It's some crypto company that came out. It's not a regional partnership agreement. And then some people kind of investigated and said, wait a minute, this isn't a real company. None of their principals have any kind of digital footprint. City, to their credit, says, we're going to review it. fine.
This I know, you said to their credit, they should have never announced it in the first place so quickly.
I am really surprised because City normally run a really tight ship. Whatever you think of them, their commercial guys are generally pretty good.
Yeah.
Because they don't just go and sign, you know, companies with the Sheikh's cousin, right? They do a lot of that, but they also
do a lot of that, even recently.
So, yeah, sometimes if something looks too good to be true, it is, but at least they're rid of these people. I hope whoever signed it is now looking for a new job as well. Anyway, that brings us to an end. But, Jules, we got to come back on Monday.
Yeah.
There's so much going on. Bundesliga is back.
Yeah, and Serie A.
And Serie A, of course.
Yeah.
So, until then, as it says on my jumper, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.